Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place Edition. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 17, Michael's Game. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarity Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
I am very fine, particularly since I have some news about an upcoming episode of Again With This, if I may.
Proceed.
The next one dropping August 7th, we will be discussing Greek Season 1, Episode 17. The episode is called 47 Hours and 11 Minutes. You can find it on Hulu or iTunes or, you know, the usual places. And we'll be contemplating Mr./Senator Thomas Calabro's appearance on that first season episode of Greek. So please visit us at patreon.com/againwiththis. That's where you get all these extras like our contemplation of Greek.
To clarify, it is only on iTunes, not on Amazon. So if you go looking for it there, you will not find it. It's only on, on Apple. Shall we proceed with this episode of Melrose? I forgot what we were doing for a second. Shall we start with our C-plot?
Sure.
All right. Here we go. Reed, remember him, tries to rekindle his old spark with Joe. So despite how visibly freaked out Joe was when Reed just materialized in the courtyard in the last episode, she's letting him crash with her while he finds his own place in town.
He wasn't even in the courtyard proper, by the way. He was like in a palm tree. But anyway.
He was very, very close to the gate, certainly. He's at her place. He's sitting in his boxers on the kitchen counter while she's preparing food. There's just like not enough distance between his pubes and a food prep surface for my taste, frankly. But anyway, he notes that he wasn't even going to go to that reunion and neither was she. And it's wild how tiny decisions can take your life in a whole new direction. But Joe is not in the mood to philosophize. Clip 2.
Reed. What the hell are you doing here? You didn't say a word about moving here last weekend.
You know, everything I've been through, I'm looking for a new place to start over where people don't know me. And seeing you, it inspired me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I guess I kind of moved here for the same reason. It does seem like L.A. is the city that anyone can reinvent themselves, huh?
And hopefully people here aren't as nosy as they are everywhere else.
Not in this building. In fact, everyone here is nosy to the extreme.
That is an understatement, but yes. Yeah. Still not clear why, if she's so suspicious, she let him stay over, but fine. She says her neighbors are going to be dying to know everything about the hot stranger on her couch. And he very presumptuously grabs her by the hips and says he can be discreet. So she's forced to be like, we're not a couple. Let's see where things go. And he's like, okay, but whatever. And then some number of days later, Joe comes home with groceries to find Reed sitting on the couch with her gun in his hand, which he points at her, ordering her to put down the bag and shut the door. And she does. And then exasperatedly asks what he's doing with her gun, and because he scared the crap out of her. And he says he found it while he was looking for cleaning supplies, which is the least likely story any straight man has ever tried to use to cover for snooping, by the way. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
She is also in the scene wearing an extremely ugly top that you can see in the visual aids. It's like, their vest crimes are occurring where it's like a tiny little thing over a long, flowing, weird tunic situation. But whatever. She comes over to take the gun back and he fucks around like he's not going to give it to her. And this ensues clip three.
Hey. These toys are real dangerous. I hate them.
Well, I happen to be fond of them.
I don't think you're going to be needing it anymore now that I'm around.
Reed, you can't just come waltzing in here and making all these assumptions about our relationship. We're friends. Really good friends.
Really, really, really good friends.
Yeah, so... What happens at the end of the scene is they start kissing, and while they are doing so, she reaches behind her back and takes the gun out of his hand and does not shoot him with it, even though it's supposed to be for protection, I thought, Joe.
Yeah, so much for her New York instinct. Like, she can tell that Sydney has become a sex worker, but the fact that she is an obvious mark for this Reed guy seems to have escaped her notice, even though he was... the dictionary definition of lurking, and also found her gun in the Swiffer box.
Right.
I don't know.
Oh, this is actually the pre-Swiffer era. Can you imagine?
Oh my
God. Were we
God.
Ever so young? Anyway, Reed, some other day, asks Joe out to dinner at the marina and beforehand walks her along the pier so he can tell her all about his stupid boat that's been sold at a government auction or whatever, the one that he was arrested on. But he doesn't care. He's moving on and she's a big part of that. And she's like, great, where are you taking me to dinner? He says he hasn't decided yet and then points at a yacht that has its lights on. And she, for some reason, thinks that he knows the owners, but he just sees a beautiful boat that's theirs for the night. And she calls him crazy and climbs off it. So he claims he's joking. He got a job at this as this boat's captain. Some rich guy owns it and just takes it out twice a month. So Reed is going to move on to it the next day. He was just kidding. And then Joe sees that he has a fancy table all set on the deck, which it's the second week of January when this episode airs. Like, I know it's LA. It's still cold. Like, you can't just do that, especially in the middle of the water. Good Lord.
Yeah. Also, if you want her to go along with this dumb, like, faux-mantic bit you're doing about sneaking onto a boat, when she doesn't go for it, chill with the fucking arm grabbing. God.
Yeah. Again, instead of trusting her instincts, she just tells him never to lie to her again. And he swears he won't, and they kiss. And I just want to point out, in the Darren Starrverse, guys who live on boats are bad news, Noah.
It's true. Yeah.
Anyway, the next morning, Joe wakes up next to Reed on the boat, only moderately rueful about having fucked him on it. She thought it would be good for them to rediscover each other as friends first. He acts like he would be okay going backwards and doing that if that's what she wants, but she decides she doesn't, and then he gets pensive. Clip four.
And when you've lost your freedom for a couple of years... you get the urge to cut away all the fears and expectations and just experience life. I'm open, Joe. Whether you want to hurt me or love me, I don't care. Just please don't tell me to wait.
Oh my God. Nice rap, Jailbird. Like, so cheesy that he's like, no, I really appreciate freedom, and I just want you to be free to be yourself, man. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But you also have to admire it for working, I guess.
He knows what he's doing, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, barf, but also, I guess, A plus on the execution of barf. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's where we leave the two of them for now. Moving on to our B plot. While Amanda's away, Allison does a pretty good impression of her at work. At D&D, two guys in suits are pressuring Amanda to give up any information she may have about her father's whereabouts, lest she be charged as an accessory. And she serenely says what Jake should have, which is she's done talking to them without her lawyer. And while they're at the door, she tartly tells them that Palmer is still innocent until proven guilty, whether they find him or not. But that's not the end of her problems today. She is called into a conference room with Allison and their boss, Bruce, who is played by good old Stanley Camel, a.k.a. Tony Marchette Sr., because Allison has gone up the chain to dispute her removal from the microcomp account. And Amanda defends herself. I just want you to know, also, what I put it in my notes is in all caps, which is like for no one but me.
Oh, and me.
Amanda defends herself.
Oh, wait, your like handwritten notes?
No, no. And it like, I don't know, Sarah. Only you do handwritten notes. I mean,
no, I mean, but okay, the typed notes. Like, yes. When you're making notes for only yourself,
correct.
Do you still put it in all caps? Okay.
Yes.
I still render Andrea Zuckerman as O, five H's exactly, and then Andrea. We all have our shit. Anyway, moving on.
So Amanda defends herself, saying that Allison was behaving unprofessionally by chasing after a client, which kind of true, although as we noted last time, Steve's reciprocal horniness is what actually got D&D the account. And Allison, not whining for once, challenges Amanda to ask Steve himself whether Allison and Steve's relationship affected Allison's performance on the account. And Bruce asks Allison to excuse them and tells Amanda he's reversing her decision. And Amanda cheerfully accepts this, saying she hopes Allison can keep it in her pants this time. I'm paraphrasing. Bruce barely. Also knows that Amanda's had a hard week with her dad and all and extends his sympathies. Amanda promises it's not as bad as it sounds, but he recommends that she take a couple of personal days to sort herself out anyway. Allison can handle stuff while she's gone. He really should have just skipped that last part, but... At home that night, Allison is gloating to Billy about the look on Amanda's face when she heard that they were giving microcomp back to Allison. Billy was apparently the one who told Allison to be assertive about all this. And Allison also knows about the personal days and claims to feel kind of bad about Amanda being sent off. Like, she's getting time off. What's to feel bad about? Also, you don't. But anyway... Billy asks if Amanda's been losing it at work, and Allison further gloats about the detectives in Amanda's office that day, which isn't conducive to a strong corporate image for D&D. Billy gives Allison a stern look at this, as he should, which, you know, Amanda's not responsible for her dad's crimes, and tells her that Amanda will bounce back, and Allison knows, but is already looking forward to capitalizing on Amanda's absence by showing off at work, and claims she hates to take advantage of Amanda's situation, but even Billy knows that's exactly what Amanda would do to Allison if their situations were reversed. And so, remember in the last episode how Amanda was a bad landlord because she only wanted to upgrade the plumbing in her unit? Well, her bad landlording behavior has escalated. Clip 5.
Hey, did you ever hear a knocking?
Got the master key. You see, I thought that if I was lucky, I might surprise you in the shower.
You're amazing. One minute you're ready to evict me, the next minute you want to...
Practically rape you? Call me unpredictable.
Yikes!
Oh my God. Yeah, that's not what I'm going to call you, but cool story.
Yeah. Leaving aside the whole thing where it's unethical to just let yourself into your tenants' units, I mean...
unit.
Yeah, like I feel like her line reading on practically rape you, like the way she throws it away, I sort of feel like Heather Locklear also hated that line and was like trying to just get past it and not be heard, maybe,
because I agree with you, actually.
Not great.
No.
But this is, you know, one of those situations where it's like, wait, what are these two doing? Because when we left the two of them, she had just, like, Palmer had told her that he was, you know, going on the lam. And then she came back to Jake's and was crying in his arms and he was comforting her. And then now it's like, okay, well, are you back together or aren't you? But whatever. I guess that's what this scene is meant to establish, because Jake is, of course, intrigued by this weird offer. Amanda says she wants to start over, put everything behind them because she's sorry that, you know, she accused him of framing her dad for his crimes. She says she hasn't had a vacation in ages. So what would Jake say to 5 days in Hawaii starting tomorrow, which is he's into it. That was easy. This is life as Amanda, I guess. So the next day, Allison is in a truly hideous outfit with bizarrely flapping, ruffly cuffs. You can see them flap because I made a GIF in the visual aids.
And pants she borrowed from the pleated Avenger himself, Steve Sanders. Yeah. It's like all pleat. She's just a pleat.
Mm-hmm. Pleats and ruffles. As she pitches Bruce on why she should take over the Mountain Togs account from Amanda, even though sales have doubled in the 2 years that Amanda has been handling said account. Allison blah blahs about Amanda not staying on top of trends and still treating Mountain Togs like a niche account, such that Allison thinks the client's getting ready to walk. Bruce claims he has sensed that too. Allison wants to pitch the client her ideas while Amanda's away. Can't hurt, might help. Bruce agrees. Allison just needs to keep Amanda in the loop. Allison sure will. I think we all know she sure won't. Cut to Amanda getting served a drink in her first class seat on the plane next to Jake, who must sense Allison's fuckery because Amanda pulls out her credit card to call into the office on the plane phone. She'll be able to relax if she does and promises this will be the only time she's going to call in. And Amanda's assistant, John, obliviously volunteers that Allison really seems to have everything under control. She's totally covering the Mountain Togs account. Whoops. Amanda's furious, not having authorized Allison to take a meeting with them, and orders John to get Allison on the phone immediately, but he can't because she's in a meeting with Bruce. Amanda, fuming, tells John to let Allison know she'll see her tomorrow and tells Jake the vacation is over because Allison is gunning for Amanda's job. So that was fun for Jake to get to fly to Hawaii, touchdown, and come right back again. Yay. At least he got to sit in first class for a while. 10 hours. Yeah. Anyway, the next day, Allison in her relatively normal suit are pitching the male ponytailed Mountain Togs decision maker and a female colleague while Bruce sits in. So Allison's concept is you don't have to climb mountains to wear Mountain Togs, which fine, but then the art is a guy climbing a mountain. So what are we doing here? But whatever, somehow.
This the is absolutely the punchline principle. Like, don't show us the work product,
right?
Please.
Whatever, the lady loves it and is like, finally, someone around here is listening. But just as both of the Mountain Togs people are cavelling about Allison, Amanda crashes the meeting. And when the clients, who don't even acknowledge Amanda, leave with Bruce, Amanda predictably turns on Allison. She doesn't buy that Allison was trying to safeguard the account. Allison was poaching and poachers get shot. Just amazing. And then Amanda chases after Bruce. Clip six.
What's going on around here?
Amanda, would you relax?
See, this is why I don't take vacations.
Don't be so paranoid. Allison had some good ideas and the client responded.
But I landed that account. I've been working on it for months. How dare you allow Allison to waltz right in and take over?
I'll do whatever I think is good for this business. Now, I've told you before, I think you're overworked and overstressed. And this is one account I'd like to see Allison handle.
So the close on this, and you can see this in the visual aids, is Bruce gives her an eyebrow raise and holds it and she has no response. And then he like does a tiny head cock and turns around and walks out. It is so sassy. These two moves. I fucking love it. So, yeah, check that out in the visual aids. Amanda gets a scene ending eye roll, which we love to see as well. But like he totally outsasses her. God bless. This man.
I forgot that he was showing up right around now and he just like elevates the whole D&D machinations area of plotting on Melrose so much.
Yep. He's great. So later, Allison goes into Amanda's office to get the Mountain Togs files and Amanda is a bitch about it, making Allison go through John. And as Allison's leaving to do so, Amanda tells Allison this isn't very sporting of her, which is rich considering the source. Allison calmly says she's sick of playing by the rules. Amanda says she can play dirty too. Like, duh, I think Allison of all people knows. But anyway, when Allison leaves, Amanda gets on the phone to call Billy and tell him they need to talk tonight. And at a table at Shooters, where else, Amanda tells Billy that Allison is going after Amanda's job. Billy is dubious. Amanda doesn't care if he believes it or not. He needs to get Allison to back off, or Amanda will start playing as dirty as Allison is, and she wouldn't want to hurt him. And he takes forever to get what she's saying, which is that she will derail Allison by telling her how she and Billy fucked when Allison was at the ranch. And to his credit, Billy just drops some cash on the table and is like, see ya, which is like one of Billy's, you know, three cool moments of the season. So good for him. But, you know,
yeah, enjoy it, folks.
Yeah. So then Allison and her dumb office mules come in to see Amanda the next day to say that she's decided to return the Mountain Dogs Togs account. Amanda shows how far off her game she is by guessing before Allison says so that Allison had a little talk with Billy, because Allison gives her a quizzical look and is like, no, and says this, clip 7.
Everybody has their own way of doing business, and what I've discovered is that this isn't my style.
That sounded to me, when I first listened to it, like she was saying everybody have their own way of doing business, which is why I called for the clip. But I don't think she actually is Noah-ing that line.
I think she did. I had it in my notes because I originally didn't have it to clip. I wrote down has, but then when I clipped it, I think she does say have.
Yeah.
Can you play it again, Dave?
Everybody has their own way of doing business, and what I've discovered is that this isn't my style.
I heard have.
I heard has this time. Oh. Listeners, break the tie.
Well, anyway, Amanda didn't think that this was Allison's style. She got so upset, not because Allison stepped on her turf, but for the first time, Amanda felt vulnerable. She needed a friend, and it hurt to find out she didn't have one at the agency, which, like, what? This is not.
And also her.
It's seriously, this is who you want to leave on? Come on. And then Allison says she's sorry, which, what? But whatever. She also says it's hard sometimes to know where to draw the line, which, true. Amanda obviously believes in personal advancement, so she won't hold this against Allison this time. And she also doesn't want to owe Allison any favors, so she's not going to take the account back either. But Allison shouldn't blow it, because Amanda won't be there to catch her. And when Billy gets home from work, Allison is all ready to tell him about her heart-to-heart with Amanda earlier. Clip 8.
Oh, my God. Whatever she told you is not what you think.
I know. At first, she tried to come off like the victim, but when I left, somehow I still felt like she had the upper hand. It's hard to know what to believe.
Allison, you have to listen to me.
No, Billy, I am through listening to you. You told me to go after that account by any means possible, and I hated myself for it. So I told Amanda that I was wrong, that she could have the account back, even though I basically did save it for her.
You did? And what'd she say?
That you didn't want it. Told me I stole it fair and square.
And that's it? That's all she said?
Yeah. And she laid some guilt trip on me that I totally fell for. I'm sorry. I guess I'm not the piranha you thought I was.
It's okay. You did the right thing. You definitely did the right thing.
I hate this shit. I know it's like standard soap writing, but like, just tell her you were broken up. The longer it goes, the worse it's going to be. Inevitably, Amanda's going to tell her. It's what Amanda does. Just get it over with.
Yeah. Also, could anyone on television, and particularly soaps, express some curiosity when someone's like, usually this takes the form of, what were you going to say? Oh, nothing.
Like, yeah.
Oh God, no follow-up questions. Commercials, guys, really?
Yeah.
Like, this is just as bad. He's like, whatever she told you was bullshit. And Alice is just like, well, I know. And then has no follow-up questions.
Right.
Maddening.
And doesn't connect it to Amanda having earlier said, I guess you talked to Billy, and being like, what? No.
Yeah.
Come on, Allison, use your helmet head. On to our A plot. Michael's honeypot plan comes to fruition. Jane comes out to the kitchen before work to find that Michael has made breakfast, eggs scrambled with cheese, just the way she likes them. That's the way everyone likes them. But anyway, then this happens. Clip 9. I did not tell Dave this was coming. I made this clip yesterday. I really wanted to play it for him. I did not. Now, I think what must have occurred is that, like, in the foreground, Jane was, like, squirting ketchup or something, and we don't see it, but it's, like, a total non sequitur, because while it's happening, all we see is Michael standing by the stove, and then this. Play it again. And then he's like, could you kind of help me? Because he can't bring the plate over with his crutches. But it makes it seem like he just shit his pants. Like, it's really good. Like, it's an accident, but, you know.
And basically, it has survived. Like, it's one thing if it just aired like that. But
yeah.
There were, like, numerous chances to cut that out, and no one has.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was on the DVD. Anyway.
I love it. Oh, God.
I don't know how we can go on from here, but anyway, what he needs help with is not the pants he just spectacularly and audibly shat, but that he can't crutch over to the table with both of their plates. So he asks Jane to come and help come and help him bring the food over, calling her sweetheart. Yes, Dave.
When you're on Melrose Place and you're in a cooking race, diarrhea. Diarrhea.
So Jane tells Michael slightly testily not to call her sweetheart.
Oh, no. It's been a while since we broke Dave on this podcast.
I don't know whether to tell him to play it one more time to get it out of his system or. Wow.
All right. Goodbye.
All right. To get back to the story, he calls her sweetheart. She says not to. Michael says Robert's out of town, as if Jane's relationship with him only exists when they're both in the same county. And Jane suggests that if Michael is this self-sufficient, he can probably move out. But he whines for more time. The physical therapist has called his progress miraculous, which Michael credits to Jane and guesses it's Robert trying to get her to kick him out, which she denies, in the process expositing that Robert will be back the next morning. Michael comments that it's weird being the other man, which Jane says he isn't. And then he calls her sweetie again because he's Michael. So then Michael shows up at Shooter's to check with Sydney on the status of the honeypot scheme. She is annoyed that he's just getting to it without any pro forma pleasantries, but he hisses that it has to happen tonight. So she makes him show her the cash. He'll give her half now and half when he gets the tape. And he also wants to meet the subcontractor first. She refuses, telling him he'll have to trust her. Michael has Robert's hotel room number, saying he's been calling Jane every night, so he must be lonely and horny, Sydney adds. Guys, even early in a relationship, I think most people can last 4 days without cheating, which is basically what Sydney says. But Michael counters that he just handed over $1,000 that says Robert is no better than any other disgusting man. I'm paraphrasing. That night, Michael listens to Jane's half of her schmoopy phone call with Robert as she promises Michael won't be there much longer. Robert says she promised Michael would be out by the time Robert got back from San Diego and offers to kick Michael out himself, but Jane swears she will handle it. Robert clicks back into schmoop mode to tell her how lonely he is without her. She misses him too, blah, blah. So then Robert goes down to the hotel restaurant for dinner and work alone when he is approached by Famke Janssen. She must be working for Lauren to pay for her classes at the actor's studio because she has a whole ass backstory ready. Clip 10. God damn it, Dave.
Oh, no.
You've been here for a few days, haven't you?
Yeah. Do I know you?
No. I've been here for a week from St. Louis.
I'm trying to sell a computer system to the San Diego Zoo, something that'll regulate feeding times.
Feeding times?
For all of the animals. See, we want to put sensors in all of the feed troughs so that the computer can determine how much the giraffes are eating and how much protein the rhinos are getting. And the truth is, I swear I won't bore you with any of this if you'll please let me join you. I'm just so damn tired of eating alone. I'd kill for an hour's worth of intelligent conversation.
But you'll do.
So this totally works on Robert. He is ready to trade horror stories about this lousy hotel. And Famke's name is Diane Adams. She agrees the food is shitty, but the wine list is good. Robert says he can't have wine. He has an early morning, but treating him is the least she can do. And he's very impressed when she orders confidently and lets her gaze at him. Sometime later, Diane's regaling Robert with a story about missing a flight and alarming her husband. When the check comes, she insists on getting it. He just has to get her to her room in one piece. And sure enough, he walks her to her door where she offers him a nightcap. And he is in the process of declining when she starts kissing him. And he says no, but also lets her pull him into her room. And once they're in there, he remembers that she's married. But before he can say he's in a relationship, she interrupts to say he's a very handsome stranger. It's just the two of them. One night, nothing more. Who'll ever know? And that works. And then they cut to the hidden camera, which, because it's the early 90s, it's just like a regular video camera. Like,
yeah.
The lens is the size of a CD. Like, it's so big. It's really funny. Yeah. So the camera tapes away. The next day, Michael makes it up the stairs to Sydney's place. Once he produces the cash, he pops in the tape and relays Diane's report, clip 11. Can you please be a professional for a second?
I am.
Why did I do this?
I'm sorry, what clip was that?
Myself, to you, to our listeners.
Oh my God,
all right, everyone
clip
has
11.
Their own.
Okay, sorry, jeez.
So gross.
You were right, Michael. Diane said it was the easiest money she ever made. Robert didn't suspect a thing. And she didn't even have to kick him out of bed. The minute they finished doing it, he couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. He felt so guilty.
Yeah, guilty my ass.
Speaking of your ass, Dave. No?
He's too busy crying. I don't even think he can hear anymore. Anyway, that night, Jane gets home from work to an unmarked envelope at her door. Apparently, Michael went out and had a card professionally printed that reads, something you'll be interested in seeing. I'm not joking. You can see this in the visual aids. Like, dot matrix printers were not that good at the time. Like, this
no.
is a real professionally done thing. It's insane. Anyway.
Yeah, on like heavy card stock
yeah.
card. All right.
Really went nuts at the prop department for this one. So she has just put the tape in the VCR when Robert shows up at the door. They kiss and start getting undressed in the living room. And once he's determined that Michael isn't there, he extracts a promise from Jane that she will get rid of Michael the next day. Up in Sydney's apartment, Michael's antsy waiting for Jane to kick Robert out. Sydney, unconcerned on the bed, suggests that maybe Jane's VCR is broken. It was, we heard up top, and Michael's like, is it? Like, bitch, you're the one who lives there. And then Sydney comes to cozy up to Michael, saying she can't believe the scheme worked, but he sits that it hasn't worked. Not yet. Goes back to the window to watch Jane's door some more. Cut to Jane's apartment, where she's asking Robert about his trip, and he's telling her how boring it was and how he's going to tell his firm he's not going to go to San Diego anymore. She gets up to get them some water, and when she's on her way back, she remembers the card and hits play, and there's Robert and Diane getting it on. And of course, she then storms back into her bedroom and kicks him out, and he's like, huh? So she tells him to follow her into the living room to take a look at the video himself. Clip 12.
Oh, my God. You don't understand.
Then explain it to me.
It's an old video. It's of me and an old girlfriend.
You're lying. The date and the time are recorded in the corner of the screen. This tape was shot last night.
Jane, Don't you see that someone's trying to set me up?
All I know is that's you and another woman.
No, Jane, it's not like
that. How could you do this to me?
You don't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. I understand all too well.
Jane, I love you.
Yeah, right. Get out.
Give me the tape.
No. I want something to remember you by.
Jane, trust me. It is not like that.
Get out.
I mean, what can you do? He tried. He tried to lawyer it, but there's no lawyering it. So, bye-bye.
I do feel that he could have made more hay about the fact that, like, it was literally fucking impossible to change those date and time stamps on anything back then.
True.
Listeners can back me up on this, so I could just see him being like, well, whatever, it was set forward to, I don't, but it's old. What? I don't know. He had an angle there that he failed to exploit, in my opinion.
I guess. I think it would be harder to argue that it was set forward, though. Like, it seems
yeah,
like.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Anyway, this is what Michael's been waiting for. He gets to see as a half-naked Robert has to collect his clothes out by the pool. Whoops. So Michael's in a fine mood the next morning as he dishes out Jane's eggs for her, but she is suspicious. She doubts his story that he was at Shooter's, having waited up for him until 2 a.m. He says he knew Robert was coming home, so he wanted to give him space. And she accuses him of having sent her the tape. And while she weeps, not that convincingly, he puts on his good guy-est voice to deny it at length in clip 13.
Oh, please, Jane. Now, you've accused me of a lot of crazy things before, and I'll admit I was even guilty of a few. But how the hell do you figure making me responsible for Robert having an affair? And not only that, but, you know, secretly getting it on videotape and mailing it to you anonymously?
I don't know. I don't know how you would do it, but someone did.
Somebody who was trying to nail Robert.
What do you mean?
Oh, come on, Jane. He's a divorce lawyer. A damn good one, I should know. There must be plenty of disgruntled husbands and wives out there who, well, let's say, aren't very happy with him.
Yeah, he does have a share of enemies.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe you're being too hard on him. I mean, all it proves is that anyone can slip. Anyone.
I mean, this fucking guy. Like,
I know.
That's a pretty good cover. Like, he's not wrong.
It's true.
He would have enemies. Like, that's plausible. But, you know, he's a scumbag.
Yeah, he is.
So Michael has just finished killing some leg lifts and PT when Robert comes in to accuse him of setting him up and say he's not going to get away with it. Michael confronts him right back in clip 14.
You listen to me, you low-life piece of scum. You think you can walk into my life, try and rape me for everything I'm worth, and then steal my wife? Who the hell do you think you're dealing with?
Jane sees right through you, Michael. And trust me, despite that damn tape, she knows there's a big difference between you and me.
Oh, yeah, right. And the difference is I cheat with doctors, not whores.
Okay. Couple words in that exchange. I think we're throwing around a bit liberally. Yeah. Second use of the word rape for dramatic effect in this episode. Can we not, please?
Yeah. Can we really not?
Thanks. Also, we're not saying whores to mean sex workers anymore. Michael, save that word for like lobbyists and stuff who really deserve it. Thanks. So when Jane gets home from work that night, Michael is lighting candles on the fancy dinner table he has set, and she is not happy to see it. He says that sometimes it takes a brush with death to get your priorities in order. And if that's what it takes, then it was worth it. Which, like, as far as he knows, it was not a brush with death. Someone did die, and not long ago, but anyway.
And he killed her because he was drunk?
Uh-huh.
Stop. Anyway, like lightning struck 2 feet away from you, dude.
Right. But Jane, looking convincingly wrecked after her breakup, tells Michael not to do this. He ignores her, of course, tells her they should put the past behind them like a bad dream. He loves her. He never stopped. And she's just so shattered from everything she's gone through that she actually initiates a hug. Jane, for the love of God, get therapy. Out in the courtyard, Sydney watches through the window, and she is not happy. That's where we leave things for this episode. Dave, would you like to apologize to our listeners?
What?
Okay, fair enough. Let's close things up by naming our episode MVP. Bruce. Great introduction of a delightful character. I can already tell I'm going to love making gifts of this man. God bless Bruce.
Big Bruce fan. Honorable mention to Billy, who possibly because he has no range as an actor, but also possibly because he was just like, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty good bluff call.
Yeah.
Well done.
For now. I feel like it's not going to last, but for this episode, he held it together. So good job. Least valuable player.
Oh,
Dave. Also, Reed. Robert, good Lord. One bottle of wine and you give up all of your principles and your big love of Jane. My God.
It's Fomka. Come on. Fomka or Jane? When the chips are down, in vino, Fomka toss. That's all I'm saying. But I would actually say Reed, who is a fucking creep.
Yeah, he is. That is fair. Good. Two good creep choices. All right.
Oh my gosh. Challenge accepted. Next time on Again With This, Matt has a date, navally. God damn it. Joe has a bad feeling about Reed, but not the one she should have. And Sydney has no compunction about playing Jane off of Michael, but is insufficiently thankful for her famcinations. I'm gonna keep going. You'll be thankful for Visine when you check out our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode. On our website. That's it again with this podcast.com. You're obviously never going there after this horrendous meltdown. Anyway, you could also pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book there. And why not follow us on Twitter with the sound turned off at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm post-carceral emo rap Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm dead now, but I'm also on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is overqualified honey trapper Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is this. Talk to you next time.
Ooh.
What?
You're 48 years old. My God.
Damn it.
Oh, God.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.